welcome into ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, and joining me on the show, we have Nedim Onuwa and also Mark Ogden, because we will be talking transfers at Manchester United and Manchester City. But we'd like to start at Manchester United first, Mark, because reports state that that deal to sign Raphael Varane are closer than ever. It's almost completed. What are the latest details?
Well, it's not done yet, and I think it'll be done before the season starts. But these transfers in the summer tend to take quite a long time because, obviously, you know, players go on holiday. I think Varane's been away since France went out of the Euros. You know, Jadon Sancho's not been completed yet, and that was supposedly completed about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I think it's a case of just wait, fans being patient, that the I's will be dotted and the T's will be crossed at some point soon. But I don't think we can put a date in terms of 24, 48 hours. I think it's one of those that will take a bit of time just to finalise. But I do think by the start of the season that Varane should be in at Man United. But this is it. I mean, people are expecting it like to happen now or next day or the day after it. They don't happen like that. That, you know, for whatever reason, clubs nowadays don't seem to get their deals done before pre-season training starts. It always seems to be a bit of a saga.
Nedim, they say that Real Madrid valued him at about 80 million. It looks as though the deal will be closer to 50 million from Manchester United. Do you think they're getting a good deal with that for this player?
Yeah, you know, the market is whatever it is right now, and the price is essentially what someone's willing to pay for you. So you can have the valuation at 80, but if the player wants to leave and somebody's interested, it's going to end up going towards that price anyway. And I think for Manchester United, even though defensively they were strong last year, there were still some questions which were being asked about certain individuals and so on. And Varane, you know, this is a World Cup winner. This is somebody who's dealt with the pressures of playing for a club like Real Madrid. So you'd like to think for United, it's a positive sign. And in fact, even though he's a defender, he's an exciting fan. He's an exciting thing for fans to look forward to seeing. And I think that's going to make a big difference as we go into this next season with fans coming into stadiums again and, you know, as I say, getting ready to root for their teams.
It might even make a difference in the way that they're going to play, Mark. We saw a report from our colleague Rob Dawson who says that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is looking to implement a more attacking 4-3-3. In fact, we asked you to put an 11 together for as a starting 11 for how Manchester United could look in a formation like this. Is it players like Varane that will help him to utilise the more attacking players that he does have?
I think so. I think one of the problems that United had last season is that Nadum's right, they did have a strong defensive record, but there were still issues at the back. And I think one of the reasons why Solskjaer played with a two in midfield off of McTominay and Fred was because he didn't quite trust the players that he had around Harry Maguire. So I don't think he quite trusted Victor Lindelof or Eric Bailly. And I think with Varane, when you've got two centre-halves as solid and as reliable as Varane and Maguire, I think it allows you to be a bit more adventurous in midfield and have your, you know, Pogba and Fernandes playing with McTominay rather than Fred and McTominay. I just think it enables you to be a bit bolder. And I think United need to be that. I think they have to be a bit more on the front foot. They can't keep playing two holding midfielders, certainly at home games. I think Varane, if and when he comes in, will enable United just to play with a bit more ambition and play on the front foot. So that's a difference it'll make. It's just a better player with a bit more pace, more experience than Lindelof and Bailly. Just can help them play a different way.
Just while we are with you as well, Mark, there's a couple of names obviously being thrown into the mix, as is always the case at this stage of the season, but some of them are definitely looking like they could be set to be going to Manchester United too if the cards all fall into place. One of them is Kieran Trippier. We've also seen Ruben Neves' name mentioned. Declan Rice had been on the wish list, but he's proved to be too expensive, and so it could be Neves. What do you know about these two?
I think Neves is an unlikely one right now. I think Wolves have, you know, they've lost the manager in Nuno. Nuno's left. Rui Patricio's gone as well. I think Wolves will have to keep some of their players. I think Neves, as good a player as he is, I'm not quite sure he's destined for Man United. I think Trippier's one they've wanted for quite a long time. And I think the issue there is whether they can persuade Atletico Madrid to drop their asking price or their escape clause. I think Trippier wants to come back. He's from Bury, which is near Manchester. He's a local boy. I'm told he's a United fan as a kid. I think he wants to come home. But at the moment, Atletico want too much for a player that is, you know, he's pushing 30 years old. So I think United will be patient there. But I think Trippier could and will probably happen. I'm not quite sure about Ruben Neves, though.
Nedim, do you think that United seem to be competing, well, will be building a squad that could compete with City for the title next season?
Yeah, I think so. I think when we look at the last year, there's obviously disappointment in terms of the way that the season finished. But in my opinion, there were positives in there. I think the fact that they went unbeaten away from home for the whole season, you know, that's key. You know, they didn't lose a ton of games last year, but it is just finding that little bit extra. I think that's obviously been the key, in my opinion, over through the last three, four seasons in the Premier League. I think with City and with Liverpool, they've been going head-to-head and they've been able to win games, you know, and not really slip up all that often. I think there was two seasons where, you know, both teams combined and nearly getting 200 points each. So I think that's the standard that sort of exists within the Premier League right now. And these players that they're talking about, if they can just find that little bit extra, then you are more competitive. Because we shouldn't forget, I think United were top of the Premier League at the turn of the year this year. So then obviously they run out of momentum just a little bit, but some of that was to do with the exceptional play of Manchester City. So I think it's good. I think they did need to reinforce. And I think as well, they need to try and find a way to get the fans back on side. Because I think whatever task and goals that they have going into this season, I think if they're fully backed, then I think they've got a good chance. But if there's any sort of disruption within that sort of relationship, then I can't see much happening.
Is that something you'd agree with there, Mark, that the fans need to be on side and they need to make sure that they're united in this aspect?
Yeah, I mean, we all saw at the end of last season how angry the fans were at, you know, the Liverpool game. It was called off for protest against the owners, and there's been a real kind of, well, certainly for 15 years since the Glazers took charge, they've been desperate for the Glazers to put more money in. I think that's happening now. I think that they're going to spend more money this year. They have to spend more money to close the gap on Man City. I'm not quite sure I agree with Nadim in the sense that I still think United are a little bit short of matching City, you know, in terms of depth and quality. I do think if they lose Cavani to any injury, for instance, they haven't got a reliable goal scorer up front anymore. I think, you know, Anthony Martial has kind of lost his way a little bit. Mason Greenwood isn't old enough. I do think that if they were going to actually really push City for the title, I think they're going to have to sign a world-class striker, whether it's Harry Kane, Erling Haaland, or Lewandowski. I don't see that happening this summer.
Go on, Nadim.
I was going to say, Mark, you've caught me out, because I was actually just trying to remain positive, because the players that they bring in, I think they are good players. But you know, you would say that City's squad in terms of talent is ahead, but you know, there's small margins in games. But yeah, as you've said there, if you're looking at Haaland and people like that, then I think that's sort of like a transitional type player who can completely change a team and stuff. But you know, United do have good players, but whether or not those players can bring that consistency level should one player drop out, I'm not so sure. I agree. Like, I do agree with you.
Yeah, City might be putting themselves even further ahead if Harry Kane is to go there. And there's a lot of talk about this at the moment. There's a talk that Harry Kane is actually going to have to force a move if he's to end up at City. And apparently, sources from within the England camp, Mark, say that he could be planning to not return to training. Could you see this happening from a player like Harry Kane?
I really can't. I mean, obviously, it's been the chat of the England squad and talk of the players, and it's come out of the squad post-tournament that Harry Kane might not turn up at training. But I just don't see it. I think of all the players that would push for a move and do that, I don't see Harry Kane doing it. He's the England captain. He does things properly. He does things without any controversy, Harry Kane. And I think he's got a real attachment to Tottenham. He's made it clear that he wants to leave in his own way. But I don't think he wants to go upsetting the club. And I just really don't see Harry Kane pretty much going on strike, you know, by not turning up for training. It's just not his way. Now, obviously, you know, Nuno, the new coach, has said on Friday that he thinks he'll stay. I don't think it's anything to do with Nuno. I think Nuno's probably the last person that'll know. I think it'll be Harry Kane and the owner and Daniel Levy, the chairman. And I don't think Harry Kane would be massively impressed if they'd appointed Nuno as coach, you know, to succeed Mourinho. I think he was probably hoping for a bigger name. I think if he was going to be persuaded to stay at Tottenham, he wanted the club to show a bigger ambition with a bigger name coach, a guy with a winning pedigree, and that hasn't happened. So, but I do think that when he comes back of his holiday after the Euros, I think Harry will report back. He's a consummate professional. I don't see him upsetting things at Tottenham to the extent where he would, you know, not turn up, because that makes him the bad guy. That makes him the villain, and I don't think he wants to be that. And I don't think it's in his character to be that either.
What does he change if he comes into City, Nadim? What does he change for the club there?
I think the stuff that we've seen over the last year or so in terms of them playing with a false nine, for as progressive as it was and the fact that he did score some goals with it, you know, it's still always nice to have somebody who's a proven goal scorer, because I think up until this year, you looked at someone like Sergio Aguero, who scored over 260 goals for the club. You know, every single one of those goals mattered, and him being in that team mattered. And I think Harry Kane is an example of somebody who has been proven to be able to score goals in the Premier League and in Europe and in all the club competitions as well. So to have somebody like that who can give you something that's just a bit different in terms of what they've just done in that last year, I think it's fantastic. He's in my opinion, one of the best strikers in the world. So if you can bring somebody like that into an incredibly talented camp that's already very talented, then surely you'd like to fancy your chances, because you don't always have to score the same goal. Now you've got somebody who can be, say, winning headers, somebody who can be posting up, can be playing balls underneath and stuff like that. And it's exciting. Like, to see Sergio Aguero leave the building was, you know, it's heartbreaking because of the goals that he scored. But if somebody like Harry Kane can come in, you know, you almost have a feel that he's capable of doing similar things. And obviously he's not got the same history as Aguero, because he came in before the club had won anything. but he's somebody, Harry Kane, who you can believe will help City potentially get to that next level.
Mark, Nadim just mentioned there a proven goal scorer, and there are other reports to say that if they can't get their hands on Kane, then even Robert Lewandowski could be in the picture for them, at least on their wish list. Who are the alternatives that are being talked about?
Well, I mean, there aren't many alternatives. That's the thing, isn't it? If you're looking to replace Sergio Aguero, you're looking to replace a guy that's given absolutely amazing service to City for 10 years, and his record is there to stand for itself. He's the club's record goal scorer, so I think it'll take some beating to replace Aguero. But you have to shop at that grade A market, don't you? And that the grade A strikers are Harry Kane, Robert Lewandowski and Erling Haaland. Now, I think Lewandowski, is he 33, 34? And I'm not quite sure he's the long-term solution for Man City. They might look at him as the short-term option that could maybe win in the Champions League, but I think they're going to have a challenge on their hands getting Bayern Munich to let Robert Lewandowski go. So you're looking at Haaland again. Doesn't sound like he's on his way this summer either. I think he's quite happy to stay at Borussia Dortmund. So then you're looking at Kylian Mbappe. I mean, Mbappe's got 1 year left in his contract at Paris Saint-Germain. I'm told that City have always wanted Mbappe. They could wait a year, get him on a free transfer at the end of next season. But with PSG desperate to keep Mbappe, if they begin to think that he's not going to sign a new contract next year, what do? The PSG say, right, we're going to keep you, let you run your contract down and leave for nothing. Or do they think, let's try and cash in now? And if that's the case, and I don't think it is, but if that is the case, then Man City will be front of the queue for Kylian Mbappe.
Do you really think so, Mark? Given that Kylian Mbappe has always said that he wants to go to Real Madrid, Spanish papers are reporting this all the time. Yes, it may have to take another year. Do you really think that he would choose City over Real Madrid?
I don't know if he's going to have a choice. Have Real Madrid got the money? I think, you know, the one thing about Real Madrid is that they always seem to find the money, but right now they need to rebuild that squad, and they've got a lot of ageing players. They've got people going back there like Gareth Bale, who's on a huge contract, isn't going to play very often. You know, he's not going to get any resale value. So Real's issue right now is finding a way to rebalance their books. They've got Eden Hazard, who's cost them an awful lot of money, doesn't do a lot of things. And I'm sure if you ask Kylian Mbappe, he would want to go to Real Madrid. You know, I think you're right. He's expressed that his desire is to play in Spain, but his big thing now is to play in a league that is maybe more competitive than Ligue 1. He wants to win Ballon d'Ors, he wants to win Champions Leagues. If he goes to Man City, he plays with Pep Guardiola. You know, City have always had this thing about Mbappe, certainly in the Pep Guardiola era, that Mbappe for them is the perfect forward. He can play out wide, he can play through the middle. And for me, he's actually more of a Man City player than any of the players we've spoken about, than Kane, than Lewandowski, than Erling Haaland. But is at PSG, and PSG aren't the sort of club that's going to sell their players easily, especially to a club like Man City, you know, for all the reasons we can talk about in terms of on the pitch, off the pitch, you know, challenging for Champions League. But you talk about a player that Pep Guardiola would love at Man City, it's Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. And the future of Kylian Mbappe, no doubt, will continue to be talked about. And if you'd like to see all the latest transfer rumours, you can do so by visiting our website. Go and check out ESPN FC over on ESPN.com for all the latest transfer news. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. The future of Lyon's Oussem Aouar is up in the air, and the latest article from our Jules Lorraine over on ESPN.com says there are a number of Premier League clubs in the race for him, and it does seem that Arsenal, who had been one of the front runners, could face competition from the likes of United, Liverpool and Spurs. What more do you know about this, Mark Ogden?
Well, he's obviously a player with in big demand, obviously, with those sort of clubs looking at him. I think if he could pick one of those clubs, he's going to be a big move for the summer, isn't he? But I think Tottenham are keen. Tottenham are considering looking at letting Tanguy Ndombele come back to Lyon, which I'm surprised at. I think Ndombele had obviously a bad first season at Tottenham, but he came into his own last year, a real fan's favourite. The problem with this deal is that Ndombele earns quite a lot of money. I think it'd be Lyon's biggest earner by some way if he went back to Lyon, so the finances might not stack up. But, you know, Aouar is a player that has... You know, Arsenal were very keen to get him last year. It didn't quite happen. I think there's going to be a bit of a scramble for him. He's obviously available this summer. If he's looking at clubs like Liverpool, Man United, Tottenham, Arsenal, I think a deal will get done. But right now, Spurs seem to have the best idea with a player swap, but let's not see how it stacks up in terms of the finances.
Now, one thing that's looking more positive for Arsenal though, Mark, is them reaching an agreement, in principle at least, for Ben White. What do you know about this deal?
Yeah, it looks like they're going to agree a deal in a fee in the region of £50 million, which is big money for Arsenal, especially for a domestic player. They tend to spend their big money on forwards, you know, so they are attacking players. But I think it's the right move for Arsenal. They do need to strengthen the back. They've been too inconsistent there for too many years now. I think Ben White obviously went to the Euros with England, made a late break in the squad. He's a very promising young defender, strong, determined, a good centre-half that Arsenal could really build their team around if they, you know, able to add to that as well. But I think he's a step in the right direction for Arsenal. I think he's a good signing, a very promising signing.
Do you think the same there, Nadim? Are you a fan of Ben White?
Yeah, I'm a big fan, actually. So I know somebody who's watched him for a couple of years now, and he would always be praising him, and I wasn't exactly sure what he was praising. But upon really studying his game, this is somebody who's incredibly competitive. He's really good on the ball, reads the game really well, not somebody who's lunging in and things like this. And I was happy to see him make the England squad in the summer because he very much deserved to be there for his performances last season. And for Arsenal, you know, they might question the money and things like this, but for me, it's the culture at Arsenal in terms of, you know, you have players who maybe play good football and so on, but at times they lack consistency. But here is a guy who I think can be very consistent, can be very, very competitive, can be tough at the back, but then still play the balls out as well. And ultimately, I guess that's what you need from Arsenal in this transitionary phase now. Because ultimately, as I say, they can play some nice football and look really nice one day. But then the next, they probably won't be there. But I think in Ben White, they've got a good ball player, but somebody who is desperate to defend and stop that goal from going into his net. And I think for Arsenal overall, that's not really been something they've had for a long time now.
Yeah, it can only be positive news for the Arsenal fans. If you'd like more in-depth talk on transfer targets, then be sure to check out our YouTube channel for daily uploads and bonus content on all the latest from the football world. Go to YouTube, look up ESPN FC and hit subscribe.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's been an outpouring of support for Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho and Bukayo Saka after the three were racially abused across social platforms after the Euro 2020 final. We've also seen in recent days the outpouring of love and messages posted on Marcus Rashford's mural, which was also subject to racist graffiti. In the recent days, we've seen arrests made, a university withdrawing the offer to one of the offenders, and much more positive moves after a very, very negative image over the last week or so. Shaka Hislop is now joining us. Do you think, Shaka, with everything that we've just seen, there will be more changes when it comes to situations like this?
Well, it depends on what we mean by more changes, Kay, and there's a wider issue around racism in society that still exists, but this only highlights. I think, as I always have, the game and its community can drive so much of our social change, and while we recognise the best of that community and how powerful it can be in driving that change, let's also remember we're 3 months out from UEFA proposing lifetime bans for players who took part in the Super League. Yet we're 4 months out from Andre Cardella getting a 10-match ban and Glenn Kamara rather ridiculously being suspended 3 games for being racially abused himself during a game. I mention Andre Cardella and his ban because we're 6 months out from Kieran Trippier receiving a heavier ban for accused telling his friends about his move ahead of time. So you see where the leadership is in terms of the severity of the offence and the messages that they send. I can only hope that football leadership and political leadership learns from the example that the football community, the right-minded thinking football community, has shown over this last week.
You're making a good point there, Nadim. Obviously, we've seen these moves from the British police when it comes to the arrests, from universities getting involved. But as for social media platforms and the football organisations, it does seem there's so much more that can be done.
Yeah, 100%. But it's like Shaq has alluded to there, you know, this is the football community. I think the issue of racism itself is a different one. But it is good that, you know, there has been that sort of outcry support. But for me, I think the reason for it in this particular instance is because of the events that happened after that game. They remove the grey area. So people are faced with this situation where they have to accept that they think this is right or they think this is wrong. And when you realize how wrong it is, it's very hard to just ignore it. You almost have to get involved and say, this is wrong. People going to show support, you know, that's terrific. But the other side of that coin, I think in my lifetime, this last year has been the most where there's been any discussion about race, racism, equality, and so on. The platform's been there, people have been speaking about it. But a year later, those three players probably received more abuse after that game than they've ever done so in their life. So realistically, it shows that, you know, there's a bigger thing that needs to be done, because people still think it's okay to think like that. People still think it's acceptable to say what they say because they think they've been wronged by these people who they don't think are like them. And to go to it, to make it very, very clear, I think for some people who do, you know, have racism in their heart, the reason for it is because they consider people like myself and like Shaka to be less than human beings. Like, how do you change that? Because people will continue to do this. All the conversations we've had, I feel like they all make sense, but for some people, they don't care. And then even now, when we talk about UEFA and all those other governing bodies, the fact of the matter is, until financially they're affected, they choose not to really come down too hard on things. And I think that's such a poor, poor position to be in, because, like, football itself, it could lead the way, as Shaka said, because there are lots of right-minded fans there, lots of right-minded players, and this should be a game that's available to all. And if you come in with the right mindset, you can be competitive, you can be whatever you want, but just don't be racist. It seems so simple, but, you know, not enough people have gotten behind it, because otherwise, if they did, we wouldn't be in this position now in 2021.
And you talk about players and teams taking it into their own hands, and we've just seen, just this week, the German Olympic soccer team have walked off the pitch after one of their players was racially abused by a player from the Honduras team. Now, it's alleged racist abuse, because Honduras are claiming that it didn't happen, but Jordan Torunariya was the player in question. His team decided to walk off the pitch. Their coach said, there is absolutely no way we will continue to play a game when one of our players has been racially abused. Do you think we're going to see more of this happening, Nadim? Than walking off the pitch,
so.
Not the racist abuse.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, and I think we will see more of it. And I think we should, because I think in this instance now, there are more players who understand the depths of what's going on in society. Like, to talk about one of my friends in particular. So I'm really good friends with Jordan Henderson. And I think a few years ago, when there was that issue between Patrice Evra and Luis Suarez, you know, he was trying to get on the side of his teammate, his player, and all this stuff. But Jordan's a different person today because he understands the full context behind it. And I think with that, he's grown. I think lots of other players have grown, because you've gained an added perspective when you hear the stories, when you hear about the experiences that people have had, when you see the abuse that people are receiving. And for that Germany side, you know, they want to compete at the Olympics. They want to do well. But they know that the game should be something for everyone. There shouldn't be discrimination in there. And even if something from the Honduran side may be misunderstood from that perspective, I'd rather the German players walk off and say, this isn't acceptable to us, because this is unacceptable in terms of what you've just said to this person. And I think that level of empathy, I think there's more of a platform to be able to do so now, and more people that understand how important it is, because that action there could stop it from happening to the next. And I'm all for it, because it's something that needed to happen a long time ago, and it seems like now is going to be the moment.
Would you agree with that, Shaka, in that action like this can educate others?
Absolutely, and I think it's important. Needham is 100% correct in everything he says, and I think more action like this is needed. Not just in incidents like we've shown recently, but I think as well with bigger clubs, bigger name managers also making similar statements. So, for instance, Italy has had their problems. Nobody needs me to detail that right now. But Carlo Ancelotti, when he was managing Napoli, I think it was, he said, if anybody in my team is racially abused, I'm pulling the team off the field. This is not going to be a discussion. It's not going to be on the players. It's going to be entirely on me. When somebody like Carlo Ancelotti, with his standing in the game, with his standing in the Italian game, makes those kinds of pronouncements, it forces FAs into action, into peremptory action. And I think that's what you show. And if more managers with the standing of Carlo Ancelotti, the world over, make similar statements, I think it forces FAs into taking actions that they have a little bit been that they've been a little bit slow in taking up to this point.
Much more action needed to be taken. Don't forget, you can catch our show daily on podcast version. Make sure you download it wherever you do get your podcast. You'll also get bonus content, and you need never miss an important topic like this one if you do subscribe. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, look at this. FIFA considering some controversial new rules. They've been trying them out at under-19 teams. At least that's what the idea would be. Fans are furious with some of these proposals, shall we say. 30-minute halves. Game clock stops when the ball goes out of play. Unlimited subs. Throw-ins played with feet. And 5 minutes for suspensions for yellow cards, which is pretty much a sin bin. We recently saw the Real Madrid president, Florentino Perez, saying that there could be some changes to the game, the likes of 30-minute halves, which is a bit of a surprise, really, when you see the numbers that were watching Euro 2020 across the world. I don't think they were too upset with the game being 2 45-minute halves. But I'd be interested to know what you guys think about this. Shaka, you've seen some of these proposals before.
Yes, I have, and there's nothing for fans to get upset about. Firstly, IFAB is a very conservative group. They don't introduce laws lightly because they feel that once they do, it's harder to undo, as you see other sports, happens in other sports. But that being said, when I served on one of the advisory panels, the sin bins and kicking throw-ins were being trialed. And it's something that is part of the process. So any member association can propose these law changes that they think will benefit the game. The IFAB board has a look at all of them and decides which may be worthy of further investigation. They do that in youth tournaments and then look at the data to see what comes out and see if it really has the desired effect. And more to the point, does it impact negatively on how the game is today? So it's nothing to get all upset and riled up about. It's just part of a very usual and often ongoing process. I have no idea what that data looked like. As I said, it started when I was there. I'll assume it ended after I did. So I don't know what came of it. That being said, again, it is a conservative organization. It has to have overwhelming evidence that it benefits the game.
Nadim, what do you hate among among the list? Yeah.
The kick-in situation, I'll be honest, I don't love that. The rolling substitution situation, I don't love that. And also the yellow card one.
because, you know, I thought I was a clean player when I did play. So sometimes, you know, you'd be given a yellow card, which maybe you didn't deserve. And if that's going to be at the cost of your team, I think you'd be very, very wary about going into any sort of tackles or anything at all. But, you know, it's interesting to hear what Shaq is saying there, because, you know, this is part of the process. This is what FIFA do. Like, most of them will never come to the forefront, and they'll never be taken to IFAB, and they'll never come into the game. So I think as fans, we just need to maybe calm down a little bit. But then, interestingly, the only one that caught my eye in a positive manner would be the 30-minute halves one, because in the games that I was playing throughout my career, when you look at the amount of time the ball's in play, it tends to only be for an hour anyway. So that could be an interesting way in terms of stopping time wasting. But again, it's unlikely any of those things will ever make it to the, you know, the professional ranks, because ultimately, you know, we hold our game very, very dearly, do we not?
Yeah, and we're all scared of change, obviously. What about the game clock stopping when the ball goes out of play, Shaka? I don't think that's too bad, is it?
No, it's not. And I have to say, we had this discussion a few years ago, and I was dead set against it. I was adamant that it didn't make a whole lot of change. It didn't change the game significantly enough to warrant that kind of a change being implemented. But I will admit, in speaking with referees, most recently Mark Clattenburg was in our studios talking about he feels that would benefit. I think despite how much you criticize referees, despite all the negative things we say to them when we do have them in our studios, they have a real grasp of the flow of the game, both in terms of how they manage the games and manage fouls, etc., and in this situation how teams manage the clocks. So I take their input very seriously. So the footballer in me says, no real need to change from what it is right now, but just listening to referees and people who control games, my mind is changing, and quickly.
All right, I bet you didn't expect a maths equation on today's show. Nadim, if it were to be a 5-minute suspension, 5 minutes in the sin bin for every yellow card, how long do you think you would have spent in the sin bin in your career?
Well, let's be fair, I would have adapted, Kay. I would have decided to be the player that doesn't tackle anybody anymore, and I would have just stayed on the field and avoided as many people as possible. So the answer would be 5 minutes, and that's all I'd need to learn my lesson, Kay.
Shaka, what about you?
Well, I've only been sent off twice in my career. I can probably think of another two or three times where I deserve to be sent off, but being a goalkeeper, you can get away with next to murder, in all honesty. So I'm going to go for 25 minutes in 15 years of playing football. That's not too bad an average.
It's not too bad an average at all. But these guys will be joining me on the latest Extra Time. Make sure you do that. They will be in. And Nadim's a little bit cheeky. You'll have to tune in to find out why.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, that's all we've got time for on today's show, but be sure to join us for Extra Time. That's coming up next. Nadim and Shaka will be with me, and we'll have a bit of fun too. Luis Garcia will be with us tomorrow to talk about the latest situation at Barcelona, so don't miss that. See you then. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Shaka and Nadim here with you to answer your questions. Let's get started with Sauruf, who says to Nadim, which Man City centre-back impressed you the most at Euro 2020? Was it Diaz, Laporte or Stones?
Ooh, that is a good one. To be honest, I think they all played well in some ways. I think
Diaz
for Portugal, that was a tough one. But I would say, overall, I'd have to say John Stones, because I think ultimately England conceded, was it like a couple of goals in the whole tournament? And obviously they didn't win it, but I think he was an integral part of that. I think he played every game, so I'm going to go for him. But credit to Laporte, because he was playing on the right side of right-sided centre-back for some of those games as left-back, and he felt like he was the quarterback for Spain. So, yeah, it's an honourable mention, but for me, John Stones.
I think that's an easy question for Nadon Rudy Xhaka, because he gets to pick a Manchester City defender, whatever it was, so, you know.
Well, yeah, it is what it is.
Even then, he didn't really want to, did he?
No.
He's like, I'm going to just hedge my bets a little bit.
That fence getting some splinters. Xhaka, for you next, from Dane. Would smaller CONCACAF nations like Trinidad and Tobago be opposed to combining the Gold Cup and the Copa America?
No, we wouldn't. I think it's an incredible idea. I think it should be done. Listen, the other thing too, you have to recall, the Gold Cup is still played every 2 years. So even if you want to have the combination of the Gold Cup and Copa America once every 4 years, and then have that Gold Cup in between, where, as we see right now, the US puts out a younger, less experienced team, Mexico can do the same, I have no problem with that. And then the smaller nations put out whoever they feel, a stronger team as they like. I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I want to know about Nadon. The next one for you first. I'll ask both of you. It's from Frank LaBeouf. Not the Frank LaBeouf. Did you ever play with someone who seemingly was fouled all the time, similar to Jack Grealish? What made them so good at drawing contact?
Oh my gosh. To be honest, those types of players, they're good when they're on your team. They are very good when they're on your team. But when you're playing against them, it's frustrating because it's little niggly things. They're just really, really good at just standing in front of you and stopping. So you never really foul them. But there's always some level of collision. And I think David Silva was good at that, and another guy who was exceptional at it was defensive midfielder Gareth Barry, actually. So he could mix up in terms of like attacking people and all that stuff, but in terms of winning a free kick, he was probably as good as I've seen. The master of just getting in front of you, slowing down and making it seem like it's a car crash. So yeah, those players, they're a nightmare, but some people are really, really good at it.
I'm talking to a defender about it. So were the players, Nadon, that actually used to bother you, that you'd think,
But for me, and I think as is the case with lots of other defenders, if you're like bigger or whatever, and there's a small attacker, the ref is always very keen to give them a free kick because he's adamant that you've thrown them to the floor, been used your size or advantage or whatever, but you don't, they just fall over really easily. And then the ref will just be looking at you and say, hey, come on, you know that was a foul. I'm like, no, it wasn't. But then the opposite is also true, because there were times where I got fouled by a little man, and I'm looking at the ref saying, the foul's like, oh, you're too big to go down like that. It's honestly, okay, I'm so happy I'm retired. So happy.
Xhaka, can you remember anyone from your teams that was really good at drawing a foul?
Everybody's just coming piling in my house, as I'm sure you just hear in the background. What was that question again, Kay? I missed it.
Can you remember anybody during your days that was similar to Grealish, where they were fouled all the time, or they were actually really good at drawing the foul and getting the referee to give the decision their way?
The only player I can think of is Ayal Berkovic at West Ham, who was small, kind of hard to catch, hard to keep up with, and then every contact he went over, and because he was so small, referees would always give it.
Fair enough. It's those small players again, like you're saying, Nadon. Aravind, to you, Nadon, says, did players analyse their performance in last season and work on their weaknesses during their vacation? Have you guys done that during your career?
Oh, I think that's a good question. I think throughout the season you can maybe work on individual things, but you know, to look back at a collective, like if you've played 30, 40 games, there will be mistakes in there and so on. But some of those mistakes are very specific to certain games and certain scenarios, which you'll never probably see again. But I think for most of the players who are playing now, the drive is to always get better every single year, because if you remain stagnant, it seems like you're getting worse. Because the game is constantly changing. The players that are coming through now, they're better footballers, they're fitter, they're stronger and things like this, tactically more aware. So you have to continuously improve. So I think players do try to get better, but it's not necessarily through specifics in terms of mistakes and things like that. I think it's just more of a desire to just stay in line with what football is in these days.
And Xhaka, are you players just like normal people, where when you do go on vacation, you have your fun, and then you're like, right, when I get back, I'm going to do everything right. I'm going to start afresh. I'm going to be really good. Is that when you have that reflection time?
I was. When I was on holiday, I was on holiday. Listen, at the same time, I know a lot of players who would spend the off-season training, you know, and trying to get themselves fitter for the following season. Sometimes it worked, other times they were plagued with injuries during the course of that season. I think your body needs that break. And when it doesn't, you can struggle as a result. So I took my breaks very seriously, Kay.
Nadim, I see you laughing.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of like Shaka. I did take my breaks very, very seriously. And the two things, the first one is that I actually played with Ayo Berkovic as well. So even though Shaka is like old enough to be my father, you know, we still had a crossover. And then the other one. And then the other one, as like time passed, people didn't really take breaks. So now there's like a pre-season, and that's when I knew enough was enough, because guys were coming back for pre-season. Because they were at the end of pre-seasons when I first started 16 years ago. I thought, no, this isn't for me. I enjoy breaks way too much.
Shaka, hold that thought, because you might get the chance to reply really well now with the next question. The next question comes from Peter Diaz. They say, Shaka, when he was here, how much cooler is Nadim in person than when you were talking to him through a computer monitor?
Oh, let me tell you, Nadim is far cooler on a computer monitor. he's wearing his trainers, but I'm not really sure he's pulling them off. You know, he comes in all casual, but that's an uncomfortable casualness. It comes across better on screen. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay, and this, what you've just said there, is exactly what it's like talking to my father. So thank you very much, Shaka. Thank you very much. You've confirmed everything I thought.
I'll have you know, I'm late 40s-ish. I'm okay, mid to 53. Late 40s-ish.
It's mid-40s plus VAT, right, Shaka?
Sales tax.
mid to late 40s-ish. I'm not 53. Let's move on.
I know we will move on, but he didn't insult you like this in person. Maybe he was better in person.
Yeah, he's all, you know, he's all cool and hard when he's in England. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be back.
Yeah, I'll be back. And we'll be waiting, Nadim. All right, FPL Circle. I'll put this one to you, Shaka. Does Arteta have what it takes to carry his team to the next level? Results seem hard to come by for the Gunners.
We can't be talking about pre-season results, surely. I don't judge Arteta by that at all. I totally understand that Arsenal are starting with Arteta in charge again. I see no issue with that. But know that whatever honeymoon period there was for Mikel Arteta has now expired. And we'll see what they do between now and the start of the season in terms of the transfer market. We'll see how they start. But he's going to be judged now. Long gone is that notion that, well, he's Pep's number two and a young manager learning his way. Now it's about getting the best out of Arsenal. That, you know, he doesn't have that safety net that he did last season.
Given his links with City and obviously his time there, Nadim, what are your thoughts on Arteta and whether he has what it takes to take Arsenal to the next level?
I think it totally depends what you want to class as the next level. I think you have some teams in City, Chelsea at the moment, Liverpool probably again, who are going to be pushing for the title next year, and maybe one or two who may be along for that ride for two-thirds of the season. Are Arsenal there? I'm not sure, but they need to be in that top six conversation and be comfortably there looking at the top four. And that jump there is going to be very, very significant, because they didn't have that consistency last year. So yes, he might have the right ideas and he might have some of the right plays in there, but you know, the expectation of Arsenal is different. At the end of the day, this is a team who have won titles in the past. This is a team that went a season unbeaten, even though that feels like it's a long time ago. That's the expectation amongst that sort of fan base, to be able to go out there, play well, be consistent and compete with the teams at the top of the table. And I think for Arsenal, I don't think they're there just yet. So can Arteta get there? Maybe, but I think it probably takes a lot longer than just this next season.
Okay, I'll stay with you, Nadim, for the last question. It's at Neil Shuvra, and they say, which is the better way to select Ballon d'Or? Best individual performer or great individual performance leading to trophies?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I think if we're going to talk about success leading to trophies, then, you know, a league season has to count, because, you know, that's where you play the most games to be able to arrive at a trophy. A Champions League, you can obviously do well, but in the Premier League, you know, for example, it's 38 games in a season. I think it's the same in La Liga and so on. And somebody's performed at the highest level there. You know, Champions League isn't guaranteed, but for their team, if they don't perform to their high standard, they probably don't win the league. So, I don't know. Sorry, I'm on the fence again, because I could give the answer, but everybody's going to be unhappy. That's the problem. I found this. I was on the Gavin Jules podcast, and I put Cristiano Ronaldo in my team of the tournament, you know, as the top goal scorer in the whole tournament, and I was attacked on Twitter. So ultimately, you know, I'm just going to sit on the fence from this point forward and say, whatever you guys want, you can achieve. Pick whoever you want. It's the right answer.
I think it's more to do with the fact it was Cristiano Ronaldo, because you say Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi, and usually you'll hear from somebody or many or hundreds or thousands on Twitter. Shaka, what about you? What do you think? Ballon d'Or, best individual performer or great individual performance leading to trophies?
Well, I'll go with what Nedim was trying to say in option C. Just scrap the whole thing. It doesn't make any sense. That's what Nedim was really trying to say. If I had to choose between A and B, it would be great individual performance that led to trophies. I feel ultimately football is a team game, and That for your contribution to your team winning silverware for me eclipses just great individual performance without that silverware at the end of the season.
Now, just to finish then, Chaka, was Nedim A, disrespectful, B, very disrespectful, or C, extremely disrespectful to you during today's extra time?
Well, I'm going to just go with A, disrespectful. Because I don't think Nedim realizes I'm still mid-40s-ish.
I don't think you do either.
That's a perfect place to end. Thank you.
I'm gonna have to update my Wikipedia page. That's what it is.
Yeah, you go update that. Just, you know, poop that one up a bit. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us on the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you so much for your questions. And don't forget, you can catch ESPN FC daily. And you can also see a bit of banter like this between the lads daily too.